Yes? Look, I'm awfully sorry.
I'm Grim Reaper.
Yes, I see.
I am Death.
Yes, well, the thing is, we've got some people from America for dinner tonight.
Who is it, darling?
It's a Mr. Death or something. He's come about the reaping. I don't think we need any at the moment.
Hello. But don't leave him hanging around outside, darling. Ask him in.
Welcome to episode 5 of Binro Was Right.
Oh, you got to do that this time.
All right, you do it.
Welcome to episode 5 of Binro Was Right. Have we explained? I think we have what Binro Was Right was about. Don't do that. I can't remember.
Yes!
All right, we have. Okay.
If you're not sure if you've explained something, just assume you've explained it.
Okay, then. That's a life lesson, really, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, if you're not sure what you said. Anyway, what are we talking about tonight, then, Chevron?
Talking about death.
No! Yeah, we've set it up as well because we just both listened to the murder thing from Nick Cave and the Blood Souls, or whatever they're called, Bad Seeds, and Kylie, and PJ Harvey. At the moment, listeners, Chevron is holding her head in her hands again, as she does every time we start these things off. So, we're talking about companion deaths.
No, we're talking about deaths.
Deaths, basically.
No, I've got plenty of people on my list who weren't companions.
Are we talking about body count?
We can talk about body count. We can talk about how, in John Pertwee's era, he just treated UNIT like his own personal raft of red shirts.
Yeah, and what about Eric Star Wars and all the horrible, grotesque deaths that he put on primetime screen for children to look at?
You can talk about that if you want.
Well, I'm not going to.
Then you won't.
I shan't. So, deaths. Basically, deaths. Because this is your particular thing.
Thanks. Thanks for making me sound that much more morbid.
Yeah. Goth. Chevron right now is not wearing black makeup and fingernail polish. So, could you start us off?
Okay. I wanted to do this because I think there are some pretty spectacular deaths in the history of Doctor Who.
Yes.
Some fairly heart-wrenching deaths. Mm. There are some... there's a pretty high body count.
Yeah.
But that's not really where I necessarily wanted to go primarily with this. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about the deaths that I found particularly effective and at times, wait for it, heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Because there are quite a lot of... I've had quite a lot of discussions with Discgrinder about how often in New
How
Who,
hard as nails you are.
Well, how often in New Who there have been very sentimental moments that you say really affected you emotionally.
But then, this was before I was introduced to how much I was being manipulated by Murray Gold.
Well, there's that. And I'd say by Russell T Davies as well.
Yes.
I mean, I get a little bit tired of what I call the power of love ending.
Shit, yes.
In more recent episodes of Doctor Who. And I don't think that there's anything bad about...
The tears ex machina.
Well, I don't think there's any problem with putting some really effective emotional story in Doctor Who, especially at the end of what is otherwise a good old romp.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't...
Example, please. If you're good old romp, emotional heft at the end of, you have to give an example.
Well, I'd say that The Curse of Fenric's a bit of a romp.
Mm. Are you talking about Nicholas Parsons?
I am, and I'll talk at length about Nicholas Parsons as well. Yeah. And Earthshock and whatever. But I don't have a problem with death being used to manipulate me emotionally in drama.
But do you
I just think it's overdone. Though? Yeah, that's what drama is. It's taking a story and using it to elicit an emotional response from your audience.
Right. So there's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's the core of watching anything.
Yeah.
That's why.
Otherwise, you might as well just look out your window.
At the risk of sounding dull, that's why a lot of discussion on ancient Greek drama and specifically comedy goes into
this
not
being
so
the definition of not dull.
Yeah. shut up. At the risk of boring people with stuff that's not Doctor Who related,
yeah.
Although it's tangentially Doctor Who related, yeah. a lot of the academic discussion of ancient drama is not about what happened on stage. It's about who was watching it and why they were watching it.
Oh, right.
And the root of the word hysteria is because women weren't allowed to watch some Greek theatre because it was believed that their wombs would become detached, start floating around their bodies and make them go mad.
Right.
So
totally reasonable.
So the very idea that drama or comedy or poetry or any other form of narrative might elicit an emotional response is old as drama itself.
Right.
Are
you directly criticising some criticism of Doctor Who as being too emotional or
not
pressing
too,
those buttons?
Not too emotional.
Or trying
I just think sometimes they do things where I feel like I'm being told that I should be emotionally invested in something and I just can't.
That's an interesting thought, is being told that you are rather than it develop.
And yes, Murray Gold comes into that a lot and music generally comes into that a lot. But just the general storyline, a lot of the time, The Snowmen, for example, the ending of The Snowmen, which apparently had people sobbing.
Tears ex machina.
I don't know how you reacted to the end of The Snowmen.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was kind of like it destroyed what otherwise was a perfect Doctor Who Christmas story for me. It was kind of like, oh, please don't do that. You're making me cry in exasperation. You're like an atheist going to heaven and going, oh, for fuck's sake, you could have told me that, you know, you were omnipotent.
There have been a lot of Christmas stories in recent years where I felt I'm expected to cry at this and I just can't.
The Michael Gambon one, though, was that?
No.
You didn't like that?
No.
I like that.
I'm not saying I didn't like it. I'm saying I didn't cry where I was supposed to.
Oh, right. So you think there's certain beats in the story where you're saying, right, this is the point where your eyes get wet. Get the tissues out.
I just think there's a difference between emotional and mawkish. And sometimes the line is very blurred, especially in certain... In certain serials of Doctor Who, old and new, mainly new. So
we could differentiate sort of RTD, mawkish, emotional, big symphonies, and Moffat, sterile, timey-wimey.
I completely disagree with that as well.
Well, it's good that you do.
But
otherwise, there'd be no point in this podcast.
When I suggested we do this topic, my initial title was just Best Deaths. Which are the deaths in Doctor Who that we found the most engaging?
Best deaths.
Can we just go
best deaths? Therein, that phrase itself is something very telling about your character. Best deaths.
Which which fatalities in Doctor Who did you find
the most
emotionally or narratively engaging? That's what I want. I know what I think.
Oh, Christ, yes.
I want to know what you think.
Well, even though... Big hatred. Well, not hatred. You can't hate any Doctor Who. Big, multiple dislike for Adric. The payoff of Adric's death and the silence that the end credits did was devastating.
Yeah.
It's like the thing that you can't do is just silence after that. You know, I didn't like Adric. I thought he was a tit. I thought it was badly written. I thought he could have been better. But that end, I know it's very manipulative. I know that. But it worked. It did. It worked on my little tiny 17-year-old soul.
As David Mitchell said, you can't just kill off Adric and roll the credits over silence.
Why not?
No, that's a quote.
From David Mitchell?
Yeah.
He's a cock.
Okay. So I've picked a few, not all, of the characters who have passed on in Doctor Who.
Shuffled off this mortal coil.
Yeah, that I've particularly
reversed the polarity for the first time and last. Carry on.
That I've found particularly effective.
Yes.
From the point of view.
Are we
going to
do top 10? We never should list things.
No.
No. Okay.
I don't have 10.
So reason why we're not listing them is because we don't have 10.
No, we're not listing because I think it make.
Because we're completely level.
We're not listing because I think it probably makes more sense for me to say this is a death that I found particularly effective, and then you can tell me about one that you found particularly effective. And
should we start with the we can build up to the apotheosis of you hate that. We can build up to the best death. Not that you should ever say a death is best, but we can start off with your first affecting death.
I haven't ranked them.
Oh, haven't you?
No.
I have.
Okay, well then you tell me your rankings.
Affecting death. Yeah, but you see, the problem is with this is I'm probably going to do a death that you want to save for later to talk about at length.
Well, if you say it, I'll talk about it. Well, I have no need. I don't feel the need to discuss things in any particular order.
Off-screen deaths.
Okay, well, I know where we're going with this one.
No, you don't. Well, you might do. Well, it's clearly the big one.
There are two off-screen deaths that I had planned
to
talk about.
There's the off-screen death that's totally telegraphed, mm-hmm. or even totally telephoned. Yeah. Which is the Briggs death.
Yeah.
And then there's Jamie's death.
Yeah.
Because Jamie has his memory wiped and is put back exactly where he left.
Yeah.
Where did he leave? Chevron.
Well, he was at the Battle of Culloden.
Yeah.
As a piper with limited... He was a piper, so limited...
Hasn't got a gun.
Limited fighting skills.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned in the previous...
Stab a red coat with a pipe. That's about
as
it.
As I mentioned in the previous podcast, the Dominators have just told us that he's shown evidence of rapid learning.
Mm-hmm.
And so what do the Time Lords do? They wipe his memory. So all of the knowledge that he's gained whilst travelling with the Doctor, not just in terms of lateral thinking, but also in terms of combat,
mm-hmm.
That's all gone. And he's dumped back at the Battle of Culloden, and that's it.
Yeah.
So inevitably, if he lasts 72 hours, then he's doing fucking well.
Yeah.
He's gone.
That's terrible off-screen death. Terrible off-screen death that you only realise days, if not years, after the event.
Mm.
Is that you just think, hang on a minute, what?
There's no way he's surviving that.
And then, did Zoe die? Because she was on the thing.
Well, her mind was wiped. Their minds were wiped and they were left back where they were found.
Little death. Malder thing. Petty Mal. Little death. Yeah.
Petty Moore.
What? Is it? Oh, okay.
Fine. Petty Mal is a form of epileptic fit.
But that means little death.
Yeah. Mm. Right. So we've established that we both find Jamie's end, which is not explicitly a death, but heavily implied through our own extrapolations that he will not last long.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the cop who's 2 weeks from retirement. He's the man in World War I who's got a sweetheart back home that he can't wait to see.
Yeah.
He's dead.
Yeah.
And it's gutting.
Yes.
And I think I know what the next off-screen death you're going to talk about
the
is.
The Brig.
Yeah.
The Brig. That wonderful moment when the 11th Doctor is on the phone.
Yeah. It's the Wedding of River Song, and the dialogue that leads up to it is what really, really does it.
Cool.
And the music. Oh! But if you can get past the music, time catches up with us all, Doctor. And then he says, well, it's never laid a glove on me.
Mm.
And then he's told over the phone that the Brig passed away about 3 months ago, but they didn't know how to get hold of him. And his face falls. And every single person watching who understands the reference, their heart just shatters into a billion tea pieces.
Doesn't it? Yes, absolutely. He did it for me. I was watching it with my boys, and that moment came on. And of course, they've got no backstory or hinterland. That's a bit of a pleonasm there. They have no reference to what's going on. They don't know why Dad has suddenly collapsed in a heap of welling tears and blubberiness. So what's going on, Dad? I'm speechless because I'm just going, and particularly as I think it's contemporaneous with the Nicholas Courtney shuffling off the multiple column. I think that's Nicholas Courtney was dead by that time.
Yeah, he was. That's why they wrote that in.
Yeah, I know you say that, but I hadn't realised that at that time, right? So it was double fucking jeopardy for me. I looked it up afterwards and thought, because I did the fucking Google thing and then found out that Nicholas Courtney actually had died.
Oh, see, I knew that Nicholas Courtney died.
And it was kind of like,
really,
even more, I was just broken in two.
It was like being kicked in the chest. And then at the end of that episode, of course, because Liz Sladen had just died, but they didn't have time to write her death in.
No.
So they dedicated the episode to Elizabeth Sladen. And you're just sort of going, oh, I thought my heart was broken into the tiniest possible pieces. But no.
Yes,
the pieces just got a bit tiny.
Yes, let's defragment that hard drive even more. It was terrible. It was awful. But
so you accuse me of being hard as nails and not having an emotional response to things. That broke my tiny robot heart. It really did.
Yeah. But because I'm big, I just got totally hooked, lined and sinkered by all of the big emotional beats in all of the RTD era. I was just, it totally, I mean, all of them. I mean, Family of Blood.
That's because you're a fucking rube.
Yeah, having been brought up with classic Doctor Who, you know, and being this year, you know, clearly I'm a fucking rube. But,
yeah. something I was going to say
we've fired off with the big ones that broke both of our hearts. Yeah.
Something that I think is really interesting in the Doctor dances is that it's kind of signposted that the Doctor leaves a lot of bodies in his wake by the fact that Christopher Eccleston actually says everybody lives just this once.
Nobody dies, yeah.
Oh, but unfortunately, the reason he says that is because so many have died.
In 1981, no one died. In 1982, there was the incident with a pigeon. In 1983, no one died. In 1984, no one died. In 1985, no one died. In 1986, I mean, I could go on. Right.
That's a reference to... That is such an obscure reference, and well done you. That's an obscure reference to...
Day to Day.
No, it's not Day to Day. It's Steve Coogan's series that he did. Mm-hmm. He did a series of six or seven episodes, and one of them was the swimming pool instructor, security guard. But anyway, you know, whatever.
Okay.
But
We went off on that longer than necessary. So, the first explicitly... sacrificed companion.
Not Adric.
No, it's Katarina.
Katarina in the thing of the thing.
So Katarina
comes
in...
Which is basically the format of all Doctor Who stories. It's the thing of the thing.
So Katarina comes in at the end of The Mythmakers. She replaces Vicky. And what's really awful is the fact that she thinks she's dead when she enters the TARDIS.
Right.
She believes, because in The Mythmakers they believe that the Doctor's a god.
Mm.
Or, right. Or a dog, as he puts it.
Right.
Is
that a Billy Hartnell fluff?
Yeah, he says, "I am not a dog."
Brilliant, though. I mean, that's just takes it out of...
So Katarina believes she's dead already when she enters the TARDIS.
Yeah.
And then her death itself in this airlock, whilst Brett Vion stands there refusing to do anything, and... Stephen is screaming at him that we could help, why aren't we doing something together? And it's one of those deaths that you just go, there are ways around, there are ways that they could rescue her, there are definitely ways that they could save her, and they don't.
Yeah.
And then she's gone.
Mm.
And then the Doctor...
But how long had Katarina lasted?
It was just one serial.
Right.
It was just one serial in the TARDIS after being introduced in the Mythmakers, joining the TARDIS crew, and then she goes. And William Hartnell says she didn't know what was happening. He actually says, within seconds of them establishing the fact that she is dead, she's been mauled and dying, and they could save her, but they're not saving her, and then she's gone.
Is this an episode that exists?
There's footage and telesnaps, and the Doctor says that she didn't understand what she was doing. And it's a really high bar, setting a very high bar for deaths of established characters at this point.
In the first 2 years of the series.
Mm.
Yeah. Which is amazing. You're talking about 1965, 66?
Something like that.
Yeah.
So that's really...
At 5:30 on a Saturday, after the pools winners. I think that's worth pointing out, is like when this is going out and who it's going out to and who it's dedicated to. Who this is a kids' program, and we have something quite as emotional and tragic and proper tragedy.
And a girl who thought she was already in the after, who thought she was dead in the afterlife with a god. from the same serial, we could discuss Sarah Kingdom, but I don't think we really...
Brett Vian's sister.
Yeah.
Does she get... She gets time...
She just melts away into
dust. She gets
fucked
by a time thing. She sort of 30 years before the same thing happens to somebody in Raiders of the Lost Twats or whatever it is.
It's not entirely unlike Raiders of the
Lost
Twats.
It's a cliche, though, isn't it? It's a cliche of sort of like being done onto dust.
I don't think her death is... I mean, it's tragic.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Jean Marsh, but I wasn't planning on going into detail.
How many times has Jean Marsh been in Doctor Who? Twice that I know of.
Three. She's Morgana Le Fay. Yeah, Morgana Le Fay.
Absolutely perfect bit of Morgana Le Fay that I've just found out about. Again, because Chevron has introduced me to the reason why I shouldn't be a Sylvester denier, is there's one part when Morgana Le Fay, who is supposed to be a completely evil bad guy, gives a woman her sight back because she's been quite good. That's a digression.
The thing about Sarah Kingdom, the only reason I'm mentioning her is because she comes back in a Big Finish audio.
Really?
And it's really good.
Is it? Which one is it?
I can't remember the title of it, but link
that's
in
good.
The show notes. it's really bloody good.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it the same actress? Is it Jean
Marsh? Yeah,
it's
Marsh. Jean Marsh. Jean Marsh is Sarah Kingdom. Squee. And I don't want to give any spoilers
multiple
of that.
Squee.
I don't want to give any spoilers,
yeah,
because it's just so wonderful. Mm. But there'll be links to the Big Finish website where you can buy it and give Big Finish your money and listen to it yourself.
Do you know we can do this kind of because you always give me a load of shit about digressing completely,
mm-hmm.
Right? So let's not call it a digression. Let's call it a parenthesis. So parenthetically, is Big Finish canon?
I'm not touching that. Not tonight. It's too late.
Okay.
It's too late to go into that.
End bracket.
It's too late, and I've got a few more dead people to talk about.
Ended that bracket just there. So carry on.
So
more dead people.
I've discussed
best
Katarina.
Yeah.
Briefly.
Yeah.
Are there any that you've got in mind that you want to talk about?
Best deaths in thing. The one that springs immediately to mind is the death of the Sutex avatar in the Pyramid of Mars. The guy with the big eyes who's dead already, but just Sutex just discards. I think in episode 3 or something like that, where he's being... I forget what his name was. But he's so good. His death is so effective. Is that Sutek has just gone, no, that's it, I had enough of you, and he's gone, and he burns. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Is it Masterson? I don't know.
And why do you find that so effective?
Because he is just discarded so offhand. It's like he has been instrumental in Sutek's plans, and for one moment, I mean, there's this thing about the villains are doing the Doctor's job for them, is that they kill their own minions so the Doctor doesn't have to kill them. There's that argument about it's easy for the Doctor to just let the evilness fight itself, which I think is great. I don't think that's lazy. I think that's actually quite a fun fact that the Doctor could just, in the Pyramids of Mars, done fuck all, and then Sutek had fucked himself because he just killing everybody who's trying to help him. I have heard tell that some parts of the Pyramids of Mars were filmed backwards and then played forwards. Is that true?
I don't know,
but it sounds like it should be. It's like the Twin Peaks thing, is when they did the whole, oh, it's just love. There's just that death, and the reason why I talk about that death is because as soon as you started talking about best deaths, that one came immediately to mind. And I haven't analysed it as to why that's a best death, other than I can picture it right now. That's about it, really. So, how about you?
Well... I'm going to talk about a death in New Who.
Mm.
And weirdly, I'm going to talk about a death in an episode that I wasn't crazy about.
Right.
With a Doctor that I count among my least favourite characterisations of the Doctor.
David Tennant.
Yeah. I'm going to talk about Adelaide Brooke.
Adelaide Brooke.
From The Waters of Mars. I'm going to talk about lovely Lindsay Duncan now. I'm going to have to admit now that when I saw Lindsay Duncan was going to be in Doctor Who, right. I got very excited because I'm a big fan of hers.
Yeah.
I think she's wonderful.
But I get mixed up with her and Jane Asher. I think she's going to make a cake. Sorry.
Okay. But by the time Waters of Mars came around, penultimate of David Tennant's run, I was so sick to the back teeth of him. I really couldn't cope with him anymore.
Right.
The whole megalomania as a plot point thing had worn very, very thin for me.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because that's how I felt he'd been throughout his entire run.
Yes.
Which I know I wasn't supposed to, but that's how I felt about him. And I was just, and they just ramped it up, and I couldn't stand the sight of him anymore. Right. And it's at the end of The Waters of Mars, it's the pinnacle of his smugness.
Whiny Doctor.
Well, not just whiny Doctor. He's micromanaging the universe like this insane narcissist. He claims to be the Time Lord victorious, and because all the other Time Lords are gone, as far as he knows, he has the right to just circumvent all the laws of time that they have set out, and he can choose to save the little people or the significant people, such as Adelaide Brooke, as he chooses. And she calls him out on his shit, which is great. She questions, who are you, Time Lord Victorious, to do this?
Yeah.
You've changed history. You've changed our lives. You've saved us.
Yeah.
And what kind of...
What right do you have to do that? Yeah.
And so after he has, very smugly saved these people...
Yeah.
She goes into her house and we hear this gunshot ring out and he recoils in horror and disgust.
Mm.
And she has taken back time.
Mm.
And it's great. And, what she says, I don't care who you are, the Time Lord Victorious is wrong.
Mm.
Fucking A, Lindsay.
Yes, but here you go. Right, so you're getting pissed off throughout this series about how the Doctor is written as being this kind of like smug prick.
How the Doctor is written or performed,
Or performed. And then, within that narrative, you get the payoff. You get the payoff of he's a twat.
I get the payoff. It doesn't excuse how uncomfortable I have been with his performance.
No. I'm not having that. No, it doesn't have that. It's like there would be no way that payoff would have been so fucking amazing.
You're right.
He hadn't been that smug.
No, they have to have him being that smug narratively to make her suicide so effective. Because if he weren't so consumed with megalomania, he wouldn't have saved them anyway. He would have respected the laws of time. But that's not the point I'm making.
Mm.
I thought this about David Tennant from day one, before it was written into his character.
Right,
I didn't like David Tennant's Doctor from day one.
But maybe you weren't supposed to.
Maybe this I wasn't supposed saying, to, like, but a lot of other people
are. No, but with the big payoff, like that, and also the one with Queen Victoria and the fucking wolf in... In Twat,
the banishment,
Scotland.
Because...
The banishment, because of that, and like how Rose and the Doctor were being smug twats.
The banishment... Was
that you're supposed to think that? Is that
but it
the
doesn't
point
matter
of the
that I'm supposed to think that. The fact is, I didn't like him on many, many levels.
Yeah.
That just happens to be the narrative device that has allowed the writers to make such an effective death in the story.
Yeah.
The fact that I don't like David Tennant throughout has nothing to do with this particular character arc and how Adelaide Brooke dies. No. I'm gonna respectfully disagree with you there.
I'm gonna make
there.
Noises like me.
Okay, yeah. That's fine.
I don't think it would have been any way more...
No, you're right. It wouldn't have been as effective if it weren't for that.
Had you not disliked him already?
It wouldn't have been as effective if I hadn't disliked him already.
Yeah.
However, that
but
A
you don't
doesn't...
think it was conscious. You don't think the writers were doing that up until
No. At that particular moment,
they
were doing it consciously. Yes, they were doing it.
They realised it and thought, right, now we're gonna take him down a peg or five.
The character herself, I've just quoted Adelaide Brooke saying,
know.
I don't care who you are, the Time Lord Victorious is wrong. At this point, they are writing the Doctor as an arrogant fucktard.
Yes,
arrogant I'm not denying that. I'm not questioning that that was in the writing.
You don't, because you don't want the Doctor to be an arrogant fucktard.
Well, no, I think it works in this story.
Mm-hmm.
I think it works for the way they wound up David Tennant's story.
Yeah,
I don't have to like his portrayal or his writing throughout. And it's not the megalomania that bothers me about David Tennant throughout. No. I don't like him for many, many reasons, right. Not just the fact that he's arrogant.
Right.
And maybe we'll talk about that at some point. But the point I'm trying to make
Who's
is...
Who's your new Who, then? Who's your new Who? Which one is your new Who Doctor?
Well, I've said before...
It's Capaldi now.
I've said before that Capaldi. I really should, by right, allow Capaldi to have at least one full season before I make that decision.
Yes, good point.
So, whilst it is definitely Capaldi...
But he's brilliant!
Whilst it is definitely Capaldi...
It's definitely Capaldi.
I'm saying Eccleston.
It's Capaldi. Oh, Eccleston. Oh, man. But, I mean, what a fucking... I'll leave it with the word "what a fucking," and let's get on with what we're supposed to be talking about, which is deaths.
In terms of deaths, Adelaide Brooke really, really, actually, emotionally affected me
She went,
because after all of this bluster, and in contrast to the bluster of the Doctor, which was written in, I'm not denying that. She just goes, "No, you're wrong, and I can't be around you right now." And she goes into her home, and we don't see it. We hear it and we see his reaction.
Yeah.
And it is absolutely incredible, because it seems like such, from his point of view, and I felt it as well, it's a massive waste of an incredible life, of an incredible woman.
Yeah.
But also, it's a massive middle finger up to the Doctor for doing things he shouldn't have done.
Yeah, top.
And it is a noble...
Yes.
Sacrifice. Of all the noble sacrifices in
Who's
Doctor Who...
Who's the guy who wrote that? Is it Phil Ford?
I think so.
Yeah.
Of all the noble sacrifices in Doctor Who, and there are a lot of characters who sacrifice themselves to save other people.
Mm. Well, Phil Ford did that again with the guy into the Dalek.
Yeah, but...
Sorry.
Well, that wasn't a conscious sacrifice.
No.
He took a pill thinking that it would... save his life, and
genius,
it turned out to
moment.
Be a tracker.
But
the point is, there are so many people, some of whom I will speak about later on in this, who...
Twats and charlatans. Yeah,
make a conscious decision to sacrifice themselves, who become martyrs for a cause. And it's always in this incredible throng of battle, or, you know, Adric sacrificing himself is... an act that, in that one moment, he stops the Cybermen.
Right.
Adelaide Brooks, the immediate threat is over.
Yeah.
This is a completely different scenario in which she could go on to live.
That's really good.
And she's not shooting herself to stop an oncoming menace
can
see.
It was very effective because it was after the storm almost. It was like, it was in the lull after everything's been resolved. Everything's fine,
exactly.
And then you just get kicked in the face.
It's like, we've got a happy ending.
Punched in the nose.
We've got a happy ending. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
Everyone's saved.
Yeah.
That's not already gone. Oh, wait, no.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, what we don't see is that inside she's not shot herself. She's just shot the ceiling and said, yippee ki yay, motherfucker.
Yeah, that, no.
So do you have any others that you want to talk about at this point?
I want to talk about one that was very, very effective, New Who again. Very effective at the time, and then after thinking about it and still having thought about it a few more times, quite how manipulated I was into it, and quite how, having remembered the history of the character, how much I should not have been manipulated into feeling that.
Mm-hmm.
Death of Cassandra.
Okay.
Death of Cassandra, where... Cassandra, who is an evil fucking shit. An evil shit, right. She's fucking evil. She's the last human, stretched skin over a thing where she is not reincarnated, but her mind goes into her servant. And her servant accepts that's going to do that. And then the Doctor takes that servant back in time to meet Cassandra when she was at her most beautiful. At the time, when I was watching it, I was very, very moved by it. But I thought it was beautiful, excellent, just really did it for me. I loved that whole episode, was the kind of Rose, Billy Piper doing, just showing that it wasn't stunt casting, that she's a brilliant actress. As we saw in the moment as well, when she was Zoe Wanamaker.
Yep.
Yeah, brilliant. So that whole, was it New Earth?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was something like that. And then the Doctor, I think it's Tennant's Doctor, your favourite, takes her back to as the servant, inhabiting the servant who had willfully given over his body to be inhabited by his mistress, and he dies, or she dies. Cassandra dies in her own arms. Brilliant concept, really. Bit of Murray Gold in there, stings, buffers, the whole shit. And then afterwards, I just thought, I've been totally manipulated into feeling sorry for an absolute shit. I don't know. What's your thoughts on that? Or have you thought about it? Is that one of your best deaths?
Do you know what? It's not one of the ones that I've really thought about since it aired.
No.
It really didn't have that much of an effect on me.
No, it did me.
It's a character that I didn't hate, mm-hmm. but it's not one that I felt the need to revisit when rewatching things.
So that's not a best death?
Well, not for me.
No.
And you said that it's not for you now that you've reevaluated it.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, I'm wary of calling things best deaths. It was a working title.
Working title, best deaths, most affecting deaths.
How do you feel about any or all of Rory Williams seeming 793?
Fucking rubbish. Fucking
rubbish. Not even the whole Amy can't remember him
fuck
thing?
Fuck off, you know. No, don't give a shit about it. No, just just coupling in time. A coupling reference to Stephen Moffat's last great success as a comedy writer. No, didn't get it, don't care. Rory, ineffectual twat. Rory's deaths, even Amy's being told to remember by Matt, just came across as unreal, pointless. I just didn't get it because saying that though, Rory's dismissal unto time by the Weeping Angel and Amy following him, that's a Freudian slip, following the big girl's blouse that is Rory, that was very affecting for me. That was it. And again, because it's Amy's story, and you know, I have set my ideals and ideas about who Amy is, and having watched a couple of those scenes, that actually did it for me. I thought that was actually the most effective death that Rory had. The fucking 2000 year Roman soldier, lovely, but his deaths were just plot devices. They had no emotional resonance for me.
Okay.
Did they for you?
Not really.
There you go. So, moving swiftly on.
Okay, so my...
Any other new Who deaths that there are?
For me, no.
No, I don't... I can't... Well, that's the thing.
But that's for me.
I can't think of one. Are there any other?
Well, there are, but not any that I... care enough about.
Go on, tell me some of the ones that I can, because I can't remember them, so clearly I don't care about them because I don't
remember
them.
There's been a fair body count,
mm.
but I quite like to move on to the Hemavores when they take out Nicholas Parsons.
Yes, please.
So, in The Curse of Fenric,
yeah.
the Reverend Wainwright struggles throughout the serial with wavering faith.
Yes.
And it becomes clear... way before we see his demise,
yeah.
that it's faith that repels the Hemavores.
Yes,
doesn't matter what you believe in.
Right,
you know, from the viewer's point of view, it could be a military faction that we are very much opposed to yes. in our own personal history, but because someone believes in the hammer and sickle, they can. Resist the Hemavores for a
itself.
Little while. It's just the belief itself.
Yeah.
So, when Nicholas Parsons is cornered by this group of vampires or Hemavores,
mm-hmm.
He holds up the Bible,
mm.
and throughout it, we've seen his faith wavering in the church, and it does nothing.
Yeah,
and it's such. it's so deep.
I was watching that with you and I was totally rapt from
yeah, you'd
from,
never from seen Stemsic. It before.
I hadn't seen it because I was a self-denier.
And I knew that it was coming, yeah. And I really was very much looking forward to seeing your reaction to this specific scene.
Couldn't believe it. I was just, because I thought that casting Nicholas Parsons was stunt casting.
Well, it's the era of stunt casting. It's the era of Hale and Pace.
Okay. But even though with the Richard Bryars thing, when you were saying, wait, because we were three episodes in, and I was saying, I've heard that Richard Bryars' portrayal of this person is ridiculous, and I can't see it. And Chevron is saying to me, no, just wait. Episode 4 is coming up, just fucking wait, because this is ridiculous. And I was watching it, and because I was so wrapped up in the story, and he came on and did like that, and it's, which is a direct, and that is not an impersonation. That's subtle. That is subtle compared to what Richard Bryars' performance in the last episode of whatever the fuck it was, Toy Story,
Paradise Towers.
Yeah, Toy Story. I'm going to kill you with your face, and then fuck you. You know, it's. I thought it was brilliant.
but Nicholas Parsons, Nicholas Bloody Parsons.
That's his full name.
That is his full name.
Just a minute. That's a reference to his.
Yeah, I know. Okay. When he holds up the Bible and it does nothing, and you just sort of go, oh, that's deep. And then he says, I believe in good. And they shrink back and they hiss. You just think, oh, he's found something. He's found something to hold on to, and it's beautiful. And, oh, Nicholas Parsons, I love you, and you're a much better actor than I ever thought. And, oh, come on, Reverend Wainwright.
Yeah.
And then they descend upon him, and that's it.
Ah.
Again, I've said it before, there are times where I'll sit with the various people that I have watched Doctor Who with in the last 9 years.
Yeah.
And they'll be sobbing, and I'll go, eh. But Curse of Fenric, when Reverend Wainwright dies, is almost guaranteed to make me sob like a baby.
Really?
It's absolutely.
We're going to have to watch that one again, then.
I think you were too busy crying your eyes out to face was soaked.
Yeah, it was quite dry.
Mm.
You know, there was the radiators were on too high.
Something like that.
Bit of dust. Who's next then? That's brilliant. Absolutely agreed. And one of the wonderful things about that, I hadn't known how good that was until I saw it, and that's thanks to Chevron.
Well, I've only got one more on my list of really exceptional
diamond
deaths.
All right then.
So, what's next for you?
Well, we've talked about big operatic deaths of major players, major parts. I want to talk about bit part deaths, bit part deaths that push the story on, make it that much more visceral. So, a couple of bit part deaths I want to talk about, and Chevron, you've probably got a couple more as well.
Mm-hmm.
Is the Robo Man in the Dalek Invasion of Earth, who walks into the river.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the miner who has the green glowing veins on his face, who dies in the Green Death. And the fact that Doctor Who has done that on a couple of occasions, I still don't know how that effect is done, where people have glowing red veins. It must be CSO, but it's so effective and so frightening. It's so Green Death miner guy's dying, Robo Man walking into the river. The scene in an Eric Star Wars, I think it was Revelation, not Revelation of the Daleks, it was the one with Rula Lenska in. Remembrance, Revelation, Resurrection. But there's one where the Daleks are coming onto the spaceship. It's the reintroduction of Davros. And the Daleks use some kind of chemical that twists people's faces up. And there's this shot, panning shot, that then closes in on this guy with a completely ripped up face. There's also the people who die through the sonic destructors that the Ice Warriors have in the first time that their first outing.
Mm-hmm.
forget which one it is, but the Sonic Disruptor does exactly the same thing. Is it screws? They do an effect where it screws up the screen, and then you get a close up on the person's face, and it's all fucked up, and it's deeply, deeply frightening. So bit part deaths that do two things: they move the plot on, and they also frighten the fucking life out of you. So, do you, those are my three top bit part deaths. Can you think of any bit part deaths? Oh, I've got another one. Sorry, I just thought bit part death. Sontaran. Not that I like this series hugely, but the two part of Sontaran one, where the unit soldiers get killed. The death of companion, not companion, but one of the bit part players, one of the soldiers, in the one of the second outings of the Angels, where you can still hear him speaking. And the Angels just want to tell you that we're going to get you. And Matt Smith does this speech about never put me in a trap. Just before that, the death of, in the Silence in the Library, of Miss Evangelica.
Evangelista. It's Evangelista. Funny you should mention that. I was planning on avoiding that because name dropping, horrifically. Yeah.
Yes.
But for my last 4 years at secondary school,
yeah,
Tallulah Riley,
yes,
who had a much longer name then before she chose stage name, was one of my closest friends,
right,
at school.
Okay.
So it was utterly bizarre seeing Tallulah, who I spent all my days with,
mm-hmm,
running around the grounds of our private London girls' school,
mm-hmm,
with her...
inner spacesuit.
With her inner spacesuit and her blank expression.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the second part of that two-parter with her swirly, fucked-up face.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely bizarre, but unfortunately it's one of those things where, again, which happens a lot with stunt casting, where if there's a really recognisable face playing a part,
yeah,
that you think of as Nicholas Parsons from Just a Minute or
Frank Skinner,
who doesn't, yeah, die, but
he was great,
yeah, he doesn't die.
No.
But if it's,
oh sorry.
But if there's a face that you know very well,
yeah,
and associate with something else entirely,
but that's personal to you entirely at this moment,
that's personal,
it?
To you entirely,
mm,
it's very difficult to engage with that death.
Oh,
because
right.
I know,
okay,
that if anyone else had been playing Miss Evangelista,
you would have been affected by it.
I don't know if I'd have been affected by it, but I definitely would have seen it in a very different way. Whereas to
that's
me,
interesting,
watching it, all I could think of was, that's my mate. That's, yeah, my mate hanging out with the Doctor.
Yeah.
That's my mate on Doctor Who. Mm. Ah.
Well, we could also, at some point in the future, and I think it would only be a very little segue that we do in one of our podcasts, we could talk about stunt casting, or,
yeah,
as I call it, cunt starting. But no, I don't. That's just a handy spinnerism for something that's ridiculous. But
it was done in the best possible taste.
Absolutely. But I mean, the whole idea that Rose was... did Rose die? Is Rose actually dead? No, she's not. Of course she isn't.
Fucking stop coming back, so clearly not.
Yeah.
I don't know if Rose is dead, and quite frankly, I don't care, because by the end, I really
could
give a shit.
Yeah.
I mean, she's... If she's dead, then by all means, stick her on your list, but she ain't on mine.
No, I won't. But there must be some great... Did Captain Yates die?
No.
No.
Well, not on screen.
Then.
This
is the guy who was a complete traitor in the first time the dinosaurs came to London.
Well,
or
Yates...
the massive puppets of dinosaurs came to London.
Yates very pitifully says goodbye to... Joe Grant when she goes off to get married to someone that isn't him, and then,
yeah,
he tangentially crops up, but in the same way that Benton doesn't explicitly die on screen, Yates doesn't die on screen.
When I heard about there's this guy in Doctor Who fandom called Ian Levine,
yeah,
I thought it was Benton.
No, that's John Levine.
That's John Levine.
They're very different.
They are very different.
And
yeah,
I think...
very, very different.
I don't think we should talk about Ian Levine.
We won't talk about that. Other than to say thank you very much.
Thank you, Ian.
For
you.
Your sterling work in preserving Doctor Who tapes that would otherwise have been white. And I think we can leave it at that on a positive note.
Okay. I've only got one more person I was planning to talk about. I don't know about you.
Who's
that? So I'm going to talk about them, and then if you've got any more to add, then feel free. But I'd like to talk about a rather marvellous actress called Carmen Monroe, who played Farrier in Enemy of the World. Who...
Yes!
...gets shot in the back rather unceremoniously, but is, as far as I'm concerned, and we spoke about women in Doctor Who a couple of episodes ago.
She was his taster.
She was the food taster for Salamander in the Enemy of the World, who was working under duress because her brother was being held captive. Not unlike, you know, I mean, she's sort of a parallel, strangely, to the teller in Time Heist, if you think about it.
But she's also a parallel to, and this is a strange one as well, because it's a film that me and you have both watched and enjoyed. She's also, I would say, you're probably going to say no, she's a parallel to Zero in Grand Hotel Budapest, in that she's a refugee and... I don't know. Sorry, that's a very, very...
I'm not entirely sure where you're going with that one, to be honest.
There's a moment in Grand Hotel...
Grand Budapest Hotel.
That one. It's, you know, that was the sequel. Where Zero tells the Ralph Fiennes character that he fled from his...
An oppressive regime.
From an oppressive regime. And up until that moment, you have no backstory. But you get the same thing with Farrier. There's a moment when there's this big reveal of what who she is, which then becomes very clear that she's got a lot more story going on. And it makes her death that much more effective, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say that, first off, 1967...
Yeah.
She is a remarkably well-drawn character for a black female character on British TV in 1967.
Yeah.
She's remarkably well-drawn, and that's why I mentioned the women episode that we've done, because, you know, I briefly touched on how I'm not a big fan of Martha Jones, who has such great potential, if you buy into the female role models on screen thing, to be an intelligent doctor... black woman doing incredible things and doesn't really deliver, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Farrier, who is working for the villain, but you relatively quickly discover that she's not that happy about working for him, and you discover her motives, and she really does do a massive amount to assist the Doctor and his companions throughout that series, and then gets shot in the back whilst running away, which makes her death, the fact that her death is not that dramatic. She's just running, she gets shot in the back, and it's it just seems all the more tragic. And if you want to talk about female role models in Doctor Who, if you have to pick them out, I think she's one of the best in the history of the show.
Really?
She shows intelligence and bravery and integrity. She's freaking hot.
Yeah.
And, I mean...
She's integral to the plot.
She's integral to the plot.
Yeah.
But, okay, the story takes place in 2018. Mm-hmm. So maybe in 4 years' time, the show will be able to bring another... woman of her calibre back.
Well, she's Courtney Woods, basically, isn't she? Who goes on to become president, apparently.
But Farrier is just an incredible character. Beautifully written. Beautifully performed. And then her death is just this quiet... thing. Okay, so she's shot. It's not exactly
There's a lovely moment there as well with the soldier who's holding her in her arms. I mean, and again, maybe we're getting into problematic areas, where he says, paraphrasing again, because I don't remember the exact quotes, but she didn't need to do that. Do we do this now? You know, where he shot, you fucking never needed to do that. There's some great things going on in the Enemy of the World, which I don't think anybody realised until it was unveiled last year. Was like, we're talking about strong women characters. The main
Astrid.
Oh, jeez, I don't know. What's your perspective on Astrid? I know we're moving slightly off.
I think she's great.
Yeah.
I think she's a great character. I don't think I need to say any more than that right now.
She's a great character.
Yeah, but...
Following on from the web of fear, when you had another great character who was misused towards the end of it. Anyway, again, big digression.
But for me, that serial really does, in the same way that Nicholas Parsons' I Believe in Good brief holding back of the hemivores and then dying, Farrier, who seems like something of a non-entity, just sort of following Salamander around, tasting his food, and then becomes the most valuable ally,
yes,
that the characters that we're sympathetic to have in the serial. Yeah. And then her death is just so undignified and so quiet, and she's just gone, and it's so unfair.
Yeah.
Of all the deaths,
yeah,
I think hers is possibly the most unfair,
yeah,
which is why I left her till last on my list.
Brilliant. Yeah, because I thought we'd blown it by starting off with the two most affecting deaths that I had thought about up until that moment, with the Brig and the off-screen potential death of Jamie. But you've just totally top-trumped that with Farrier. Not that that's what you meant to do, but it's just, that's a fantastic, absolutely, totally agree with you there. That's just very, very, and it's almost like I need to go and watch it again just to go and get what you were talking about. I need to watch it again now.
Well,
if that's not a great recommendation, I don't know what is.
Well, unless you have any more that you wanted to cover.
How could I possibly follow that?
I think maybe we should just invite you to disagree with us. on Twitter, at @BinRowWasRight.
Yeah, you can say it wherever you like.
If you want to get personal, I'm at Betsy Chevron.
Yeah. And if you want to get personal, I'm at Discgrinder. But know this now, I will destroy you. But no, I won't, because I'm lovely. But
if you want to find us on Facebook, we're at @BinRowWasRight Podcast.
Yeah, on Fuckbook. And if you want to leave a comment on @BinRowWasRight, the blogspot, please do. But, be a bit friendly. We've got a lot of people who want to have a discussion.
Have we?
Yeah, we have got thousands.
Okay.
Millions of people. I've got a moderation thing that I haven't... stuff. Yeah. We should also talk about references to Doctor Who in Father Ted. No, we won't.
And... if you want to tell us that we're wrong but don't want our other two listeners to see it,
yeah,
then you can email us at binrowwasright@gmail.com.
Well, no, actually, you can email us on binrowwaswrong@gmail.com. Oh, that's a bad joke. That's such a bad joke. We finish on that.
As long as we can finish, I don't care.